Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher, and I'm joined as always by Christopher Sormani. Hello, Christopher Sormani.
Evening, Christopher Gallagher.
Lovely.
Gallagher. Sorry.
Yeah, either's fine. Gallagher or Gallagher's fine. Not Gallagher. But lovely to see you, Sormani. How are you, my friend?
Terrific. Terrific. Good. Great to be here. Join myself. Wee cup of tea.
Got your new biscuits as well. We've got some fancy ones for you.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Bit hot in here, though.
Yeah, there's not, you know, this is a place that heats up very, very quickly, which will be great for the winter, but summertime it's a bit much. But hey,
you know what, if only we had a solution to that, you know, like, anyway, carry on.
Okay.
I mean, you can probably get one of those airplane things on like next day delivery, so I'm sure it'll be fine for next
That's
time.
That's fine. Alan Edgar, we can hear his dulcet tones. How are you, Alan?
I'm good. Nice to be here. Huge, huge week, so I'm looking forward to chatting it through. Celtic therapy,
absolutely. You did say, let's kind of focus on these kind of 5 days, and it is really kind of like just a really, really exciting time to be a Celtic fan. Let's just start there. Chris Sormani, how excited are you about everything? The transfer window, we are recording this at 7:15. The transfer window is still open till midnight, so, you know, there might be things happening that, again, we'll cover tomorrow on the Lunch Club and over the weekend. But Chris, just at this moment, with the transfer business, with the Real Madrid on Tuesday, with Rangers on Saturday, how are you feeling?
Very excited. I mean, you've got the transfer window just now. It looks as if we're going to get one more in. Some of the rumours are saying potentially more than one.
Yeah.
We've already got a...
Already.
Already. We've already got a very strong squad. We get the first glimpse of Haxars last night, which I'm sure we'll come and talk. He looked promising last night, potential other players coming in. You know, you've got to be really happy with the squad and where we are. And even if we didn't sign MD today, you know, you would be getting in, certainly domestically, thinking, you know, we're the team to beat. And then, obviously, we'll see what comes of that tomorrow, and then we've got two absolutely massive games, huge games. This is why you support Celtic. Well, it's not you support Celtic for a lot of reasons, but these big occasions are things that you look forward to so much. Saturday followed by Tuesday, atmosphere is going to be absolutely amazing. Just hope next week that we're as positive as we are tonight.
Exactly, I couldn't agree more. Alan, it's like just everything's came together, and you know, the ideas that we had when Ange took over, I think we are so far ahead of where we thought we would be this time last season. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think it's just extremely exciting because you've got a 6-day period, really, you know, from last night through to next Tuesday, that also includes the transfer window ending. And I think if I'm being, you know, take the transfer window first, this feels like a very, very different window to any over the last decade. And I don't even mean that in terms of...
Maybe even beyond?
Yeah, possibly. And I don't even mean in terms of the quality of player. I mean, sitting here on the last day in the position that we are, I mean, it doesn't close till midnight tonight. And I think pending one more, who we'll come on and talk about, I think we're really, really pleased. We're not sitting demanding, you know, we need this, we need that. And largely, I think that's always been the case over the last, you know, significant number of years, especially when you take into account that this is a Champions League year for us, group stage.
Yeah.
That then amps up what you need to do and what you can do. So it is, it's really positive. That finishes up tonight, and then over the next 5 days, you've got two of the biggest games that I can really remember at Celtic Park consecutively, and that I can remember in a long time. Easily going back 4 or 5 years, so it's a really exciting time. I'm really looking forward to it, and to be honest, I just kind of want to dig in.
So, Manny,
the thing about this transfer window and the last one in January is it just looks so controlled and planned. You know, we've been in situations where, you know, to quote Louis' famous quote, "Where's my right back?" We're scrambling about signing Jeremy Toljan with 25 minutes or whatever of the window left, whereas we've went about our business, you know, very, very kind of measured, in a measured manner. As a support, we were worried after we signed CCV and Jota that was it, because we're used to that. But it wasn't. You know, we've strengthened in other areas. We've talked about how if deals kind of fall in the lap of the club, or if Ange, you know, gets shown somebody and he thinks it's a goal, he'll go for it. I think the Haksabanovic signing and, you're going to have to excuse me there.
I think it's Abelgaard.
That'll do, the Danish guy. You know, assuming he signs, it seems as if they aren't players we're signing for the sake of it. The manager could have signed the number six that we've been talking about, you know, went for Sosa earlier on in the window, and he could have signed a number six before now. But I reckon he would have went into this season without the number six that we're talking about, unless one of the right quality came to the fore, and that's what's happened just now. And that's what's so pleasing about it, because it's not scrambling about, it's not punts. Everybody that's came in seems to have a purpose. We're not used to that, and I think that just adds to the excitement about what's going to happen this season.
Yeah, Alan?
And I think just on top of that as well, I agree. I think we're in a better position in terms of we're now strengthening. We're now moving away from talking about a first 11 and five subs and then reserves. I think we're now looking at a pool of 14, 15 players who are genuinely competing for starting positions. Then after that, you've got players that are a little bit away from it, but they're trying to get there. And that's what you want. And I think this window particularly has kind of highlighted that this is the one you need to probably back Ange. And I think if you are trying to step away from it, look at it a little bit coldly, if you want Ange Postecoglou to achieve what he believes he can at Celtic, whatever that might be, this is the window where you need to push on. And historically, this is where we have shied away. So without straying into the realms of board praise, which is something I would always try and steer very clear of, this is a window that, and I think the Abelgaard signing is one I think that we might have stepped back from, because we could easily have said, well, Moy is that midfielder that will give those rotational minutes to McGregor. You need to make sure that the manager does have what he has so that he's happy, so that he goes into this season thinking, what I've asked for, I've largely got. You not always get what you want, but, you know, second season Ange, well, everyone tells us that is the best version of it, and I think we've been impressed with what we've seen so far. You need to give him what he needs to try and be the best, whatever it is. And I think we have got, you know, spent in the region of what we probably should spend as a club, but it looks like we've kind of married that with right time and right type of players as well. How the season shakes out will be very different, but as we sit here just now, I don't think we can say that unless, you know, severe injuries or whatever it is, we're quite happy with the areas that we've recruited for and the profile of player. Whether they succeed or not is really down to the player and the club.
Of course.
But sitting here as we are just now, I think most people would be very, very content, if not, dare I say it, happy.
I think after this window, see any notion or any kind of lingering chat about from the start of last season about players coming in that weren't Ange's signings, that's all gone. I mean, I think some at the start of last season probably weren't his. I do think he had to say yes or no to them. But I think that was a kind of a playbook. That's maybe not the right word. That was a criticism or something that was thrown up there in terms of talking about some of the signings that came in. Whereas I don't know how true it was, but we've moved past that now. We're in a stage where this is his squad. It's entirely his.
It felt a wee bit like almost like a comfort blanket, maybe.
Yeah.
For people to, if we don't play the way we want, we can say, well, it's not his team, it's not his players.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an element of that, but maybe you get two, given maybe, some of those players are maybe, still there this year. I think Samani's right.
Maybe the manager wasn't as much in the firing line last season as he will be this season, and that's not a bad thing. Manager should always be in the firing line. But last season, maybe people would give the excuse that, well, it's not his players, whereas now it is.
And what I'm saying is I think with the players that he's got that are his, all his players, and that's absolutely the case, I think we are going to go to new levels. So, you know, I'm not saying that, but it is now stand or fall entirely on what happens just now. That is tremendously exciting. For me, this seems like, last season was amazing what we did. This almost seems like the dawn of a new era, though.
Yeah,
and that
it really does.
I don't know if I'm expressing myself well when I'm saying this, but it seems like the second part, and everything's lined up for that to be even better than the first part. And there's just a sense of anticipation just now about it. And
see, there's been a lot of chat about and a lot of comparisons between like the Brendan Rodgers team and this team, right? There's been a lot of revisionist history regarding Brendan Rodgers teams. A lot of people, of course, people are going to take pot shots and all that, and that's fine. But, you know, Brendan Rodgers team, the first team specifically was, you know, incredible, really, really incredible in terms of what they did. But even then, I didn't have the feelings I have now.
I don't want to
hit with hyperbole, which, you know, Monday was hyperbole Monday after the 9-0 win, but, like, I don't want to
hope next Monday's hyperbole Monday as well.
Hope next Wednesday's hyperbole Wednesday.
Next to keep me down.
You need a bit of hindsight always with these things, right? What I would say about Rodgers that's completely different from Ange is that Rodgers would take, I mean, let's take Paddy Roberts. The rumour, confirmed or otherwise, that Postecoglou spoke to him and then chased him, right? Rodgers' personality is...
I can fix him, not a problem. I can fix him, make him a better player.
He's got an ego that thinks that he... I mean, you know, Oliver Buck, I'm going to turn him into a forward. That was classic Brendan Rodgers. Whereas Postecoglou's got a set of standards, and if you don't meet them, you're out the door. So it's completely different for me in terms of that. Now, that's not to diminish what...
It's a different style of management, isn't it?
It is, but what I also think as well is Ange's standards will remain those standards, and in terms of the players then going forward, whereas I think with Rodgers, when he gets wrapped up in that ego where he thinks he can fix players, he's maybe, when players come in, he's then thinking, I can do this, I can do that to them, whereas when they come in under Postecoglou, they're at a specific standard that he wants or he's looking for. So I think sometimes, and we've seen that probably when he's at Leicester and at some other clubs, there's a lot of diminishing returns because I think he's one of those managers, I think Mourinho's another manager, that has initial success but can't maintain it. And, and I think one of the main reasons for that is his personality.
Back over to Brendan Rodgers' PR man. Alan, if you'd like to make a statement.
I knew I was going to get worked into a corner here. I think maybe trying to step back from it a little bit and look at it, I think there's the big difference between Brendan Rodgers and Ange Postecoglou, just not about their styles of football. I think that Ange Postecoglou has managed to get himself into a position at Celtic through a number of reasons, his own ability, the club's ability to seek out and find talent, seems to be the big difference.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the two, I think there is a big difference between what Celtic have managed to do under Postecoglou with a budget and what we did with Brendan Rodgers under a budget. I think Brendan Rodgers, his PR man, would argue back that if he had the ability to find talent in the same way that Celtic have under Postecoglou, which I think a lot of has to actually go to Postecoglou because he's brought players from a market that Celtic wouldn't have shopped in previously.
Yeah, and he knows,
So those are players, Daizen Maeda, Rio Hitati, Kyogo Furuhashi and Yusuke Udoguchi are all players who quite simply would not be at Celtic if Ange Postecoglou wasn't a manager. They might get picked up by other European clubs, but they wouldn't have got picked up by Celtic. So I think that's where the difference is. Ange and Celtic, because it is a kind of collaboration at this point, have managed to exploit a number of markets that Celtic weren't able to 4 or 5 years ago. We did well with kind of developing players in England, obviously Dembele, and we did well through connections there. But our ability, and it's not all just down to Ange, to identify talent looks to, at the moment, be geared towards maximising opportunities. And if you look at what we're doing just now, and obviously aside from Ange's contacts, we have looked particularly at markets where we think players will want to move, or players who are not in a good situation and they'll look to bring them here. So there are a lot of things that are different there. And I think if you could have that 4 or 5 years ago, I think the quality of coach Brendan Rodgers is, he would have done really well with it as well. So it's good that we've got a really good coach now. We had a really good coach then.
Look him go.
The difference is though that I think...
I do agree actually.
The squad depth and quality at the moment under Ange, we never had anything like that under Brendan Rodgers in terms of actual depth of 15, 16 players who are properly fighting for a starting 11. We had areas that are part of those competition, but we never had anything like this.
But the thing is with Rodgers, he brings everybody with him. He takes his entourage with him and the entire, you know, you're talking about the markets we're exploiting and how we set up and scout. He brings that. He takes that to other clubs. Now, it might be very simplistic to say that he's one of these managers that can have a strong team at the start and then fades away. That's his track record, though. That is his track record at every major club he's managed. And again, maybe I'm kind of filling in blanks and making this up, but, well, that's what I do when I come on this podcast. But he has got a team around him, coaches, you know, sports science.
Nicky Hammond,
you know. All these guys, you know, that he brings with him. So that's part of the package with him. Whereas Ange comes in and he's prepared to work with other people. Something that quite a lot of people criticised him. Why the hell are you having Gavin Strachan and John Kennedy? I digress. But I think that's part of the problem. I'm not criticising Rodgers as a coach. See the galvanising effect that he has on football clubs when he walks through the door? It's massive. It's absolutely massive. I don't think he can sustain that. And I don't know how willing or able he is to change his way of working, and I don't really know why we're still talking about Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah. I love that we're two of our biggest games in the horizon. We're about to have a civil war about Brendan Rodgers. I just disagree entirely, and mainly because I think Brendan Rodgers, you know, continued success until he left Celtic. He never lost the trophy.
What a rabbit.
I don't see the big issue.
I put out a tweet today because I was doing a bit of research for a podcast that's coming up. Celtic play 5 games in September over the course of 15 days, starting on Saturday. In October, we've got 9 games in 29 days, which works out to just over a game every 3 days. Squad's very important, clearly, with those amount of games, the intensity. Then you've got players after the 5 games in September, you get 2 weeks where we've got a lot of internationals, so you know that they'll be kind of still kind of playing games. So I just want to quickly go over, obviously, the players that we've brought in. Alexandro Bernabei, Haksabanovic, Moy, Sigurist, Jota, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Daisy Maeda, Moritz Jens, and Abelgaard. It's an interesting, you know, we Cameron Carter-Vickers, Daisy Maeda, Jota were all here last season. Now, they weren't our players, but they are now officially our players. But, you know, we brought in 8 players, but essentially, If the Oliver Abelgaard transfer goes through, we've really only brought in 5 just because we already had those 3 players as part of last season's team. Just who's really stood out for you, Sirmani? And let's leave Cameron Vick, CCV, Jota and Maeda aside because we've, you know, waxed lyrical about them. From the new players, who's kind of impressed you?
Just for the listener, he's actually passed them over to me, just so that I...
I'm a nice guy.
Just in case I forgot who they are. So let me see who is for us now. I mean, out of those...
We're the ones in the hoops, mate.
Yeah. It's the ones that see in, because the ones that see out have left.
Jeez, I can't wait to get a Celtic Park for my first game. That's me doing an American accent. You know that soccer guy, Twitter account.
Jesus Christ, hurry up. get on with it.
Bernabei. No, I mean, see the players that out with, like Vickers and Jota that we've signed that come in, none of them have particularly impressed more than players that were already at the club. The guys that have impressed me most are the ones that we signed in January, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But what I do like about them is the strengthen. Like, for instance, Sigurist isn't a world beater. Sigurist isn't going to replace Joe Hart. Sigurist goes in goals in comparison to every other goalkeeper that we had at the club. You're far more confident in them being there. Moy, we'll probably talk about the game last night. He came in, even though he's not looked sharp or not looked up to speed, he looks like one of those players who's maybe not quite where he was, but he's able to adapt his game and keep it moving and pass the ball about. So has he strengthened it over the midfield over what we had, like, say, with McCarthy, which is the obvious comparison? You'd have to say yes. The good thing about these guys, though, is you know that they're not there to be first-team players. You know that they're there to come in to do a job at a higher level than the guys that were already there as backups to the first pick. So in terms of, we're not packing the squad with filler. We're packing the squad with guys who are able to come in and do a job. But crucially, we're also buying players who look as if, as Alan said earlier on, are going to be able to make a push for that first team. Haksabanovic last night, I know it was only a cameo, but you could tell very quickly.
Sometimes you can't you?
Yeah, and I mean, 6 weeks, you know, 10 weeks from now, we're sitting back and going, oh, that guy's not done very much.
That's look, Derpo Richter was good for those first 20 minutes.
It's entirely possible, but everything about him last night screamed, you look as if you will be in and about that front three for a lot large part of this season, and that's what's really important about it.
Alan, yourself, like obviously, as we mentioned, Jota has been in sensational form, Carter Vickers has been solid. What's your thoughts on the guys coming in?
I think the point about strengthening the immediate competition is valid, because I think it is the sum of the parts, as opposed to, I think James has quite clearly come in and looks like a player who has immediately kind of shuffled the pecking order of centre-halves.
Yeah.
And again, as a player that he will need game time to develop and learn, but given he's only the period of time he's been here, he's looked quite assured. And he looks like a player that, at the very least domestically for us, could be a starter every week. I think as you maybe go up the levels, it might take him a little bit longer, but he is a young player as well. So he's the one I would say that of the signings in the summer, I think has made an immediate impact. But I think the excitement will be over the two that we look likely to complete this week. I think that profile of a defensive midfielder is one I feel that we've been talking about for
weeks.
Months. Quite easily. And we've talked about it so many times. We've kind of went on about we maybe just need someone who's more natural as a six. And I think he looks like he will be that profile of player. And I think Hak Sabanovic, we have got three players who are all competing for a first team start. And Leila Abada, after last weekend, certainly is very much in that discussion now with Abada, Maeda and Jota. But you look at the amount of games we're going to play and the ages of those wingers, I think you maybe need another one. And James Forrest, if you're talking about bringing someone in who's going to improve and push people on, I'm not sure he's at that stage at the moment. Whereas someone else who is an experienced player, who looks very comfortable in the ball, very technically gifted, that's what we've done. So it is about improving that 14-15. So that's what I would kind of think that the manager would want now. Not to be talking about, well, I've got a guaranteed starting 11 that I'm not going to change unless there's injuries. What you want to change that to is, I've got 14-15 who will be fighting really for that proper pecking order. Because I think if the two players who've come in this week adjust and settle in quickly, I think you will start to see that 14-15 become interchangeable, and that you have two changes each game. And I think you could probably add
two changes,
Jets into that as well.
Two changes that happen that aren't happening in the 85th minute, though. They're happening in the 60th minute. Guys getting half an hour more. And I know obviously that's down to the kind of how the kind of rules and subs have changed. But what I like about the idea is, you may not start, but you still might get 40 minutes. You still might get half an hour. And that's, you know, that's very attractive to players.
The substitutes have changed the game. I mean, it is different now when you're able to make that many subs. It means that you can have a genuine rotational squad that's not just, you know, in name only. It means basically you're playing on Saturday, but you're coming on the 55th minute. You know, it does change the nature of the squad, and it means that you're more able to keep guys happy and a bit fresher as well, in terms of you're not having to run the Callum McGregor's only going to benefit from some of these, you know, the signings that come in, and I think that's really, really important.
I think, see, when you're talking specifically about subs, and I know we're getting into loads of detail with loads of different things here, but see, when you're talking about subs and trying to change a game offensively, it might just be my own opinion, but if you have real options wide, it is one of the first areas that you would look at if your starters aren't performing. So if Jota or Dyson Maeda or Leila Abada are just not having a game, I think it's one of the areas that you would look at first, where you can make a change that can certainly, going forward, can impact the game. I think you look in the centre of the park, you look at fullbacks, defenders, they tend to not drop below that average kind of 7.5 kind of standard, whereas wingers can be, their variations are much higher. And I think if a player's, you know, they're struggling, they've not got the beat of their man, or they're maybe just not finding the space or getting on the ball, or their touch is off, any of these things, it's one of the areas you look at first and think, where can I make a sub that influence, can impact the game?
Yeah, impact.
I think the rest of the park, players tend to be more consistent. You know, if you've got a centre midfielder that's, you know, having a really, really poor game, is having a, you know, a 4 or a 5, say, the likelihood is they won't be in that first team rotation. Whereas wingers, I think there's an acceptance that sometimes the levels will vary a little bit more.
Yeah.
Other areas of the park, you expect more reliability. So I think that's where, if you're talking specifically about subs that can change a game, one of the first areas I think you're looking at is those two attacking wingers.
Is that final third the strongest part of our team, Chris? Or is it the midfield? Because the midfield, I feel, if we bring in, Abelgaard, if he's brought in, if he's confirmed tonight, I think that one signing completely changes everything, because you do have options to put Callum McGregor in the eight for the Champions League. Without him, as we said last week, I would now be disappointed, because the rumour mill really kind of went to overload, that Fabrizio Romano guy and all that stuff. It's been a number of kind of decent journalists have confirmed that Celtic are really close with it. But if he signs, does that make the midfield the exciting kind of options, or is it still the forward line for you?
I think the forward line's stronger. You used the phrase exciting there. I mean, it depends how you look at that. Your forward players are going to get goals, yeah. I still think the forward line will be stronger in terms of who we've got there. The midfield will be exceptionally strong too. But see, if you're looking at it in terms of potential resale value and, guys at your club who you think are going to go move on to a higher level, I think you've got a few players that have potential, Jota, Haksabanovic, Kyogo's maybe a wee bit older, but, in terms of what potentially he could do in terms of resale value.
Gigi.
Abada. McGregor's now 30, 31?
Yeah, he's coming up for 30, yeah.
So you don't, as much as he's a real quality football player, he's not somebody that, is going to hold that resale value that you've got there. A lot of the other guys around, you've got Moy, you've got Turnbull, none of them have it. Matt O'Reilly is potentially somebody who could be up there with those guys.
I just loved how dismissive that was.
They've not got it. So maybe it's a crude way of looking at it, but I think there's more potential players that you would want to be selling for inflated fees at the front of the pitch as opposed to in the middle of the park. But I don't think that kind of takes away from the quality there. I think, as you say, if we sign Abelgaard, really, really just cements that, and it's a area of the park that will be so strong in.
Is this our strongest squad midfield-wise going into a Champions League? Like, we've talked about the quality that we've had in regards to, first team, as in first team picks. But you're looking with Abelgaard coming in, you're looking at McGregor, Abelgaard, Hitati, O'Reilly, David Turnbull. There is real quality footballers there, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of ability and there's a lot of talent, and you have no better opportunity than the first game being against the European champions.
Yeah.
That genuinely, I think, as much as that is a
nothing
frightening,
to lose in a way.
There's a frightening prospect. We keep talking about how it must feel as fans. We can't wait for next Tuesday, what it's going to be like. Long time on the Champions League, and we start off with a game like that. The players will feel the exact same. A lot of these players, I know that there's some, Cal McGregor's played in the Champions League before, Joe Hart has. But there's a lot of players there that haven't felt what that's like. There's players who haven't played against the European champions before. They will want to go out there and get that first 10, 15 minutes under their belt so that they can hopefully get their touch, drop it off, make their runs and realise this is largely what I do in training. It's just it's a bit faster. That's what they want to do. They'll want to go out there and know that, can I at least compete at this level? And that will happen within the first minutes. I think we've talked about it before in the example of, that first minute when, you maybe go up for a header if it's a centre-half, or if you're a central midfielder and you receive the ball and there's a player at your back and you drop it off. You do that thing that's a reflex domestically that you've done all your career. But then when you do it at the highest level against one of the best teams and you do it and you do it successfully and you go again and you have to do it again, can you? And it's almost that validation. And that's what they want. So we can't wait for it as fans. We want to see that first 5 minutes. Make sure you don't lose an early goal, all these things. For players, it's even more micro than this. They want to know that their touch still works, that the pressure that they're under, that they can do all the things that they can normally, they can do it in that environment. And I think that's what it's about. And it is a strong team. How they cope with it, there's a lot of players that haven't played there before. We'll find out. But there's no better test than to understand the level than playing against the European champions.
I'm not going to go over the players that have left. The only real extra kind of, again, it's not been confirmed, but it's been very much alluded to, is that Mikey Johnson is going to Vitória Guimarães as on loan. Good move, I guess.
5 years too late.
More than likely, but very late 90s, early 2000s team. I've still got the ticket, the Vitória Guimarães tickets. But yeah.
I don't think they've been in a kind of time capsule just because they played us then, Chris. I think they've had their own history since then. You
know? What is with all the tickets, the retro tickets lying about?
I was just sorting through them. I've got a number of retro tickets. Yeah, I was going to maybe put them
in the
collage.
He takes them out to pubs and just puts them on the table and somebody will go, what's that? And you'll go, let me fall out my pocket there.
Yeah. Oh, Celtic versus Croatia Zagreb, let me tell you about that.
I mean, that voice is even annoying just when you're doing it as a joke.
But no, so what we're going to do is we're going to do a podcast looking at the transfer window overall. We'll break it down.
Who's on it?
Christian, Boud and Kieran Devlin, the transfer committee.
I'll tune in.
And that will be probably next week, but it'll be on the cynic.co. Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about the... Well, I want to get your thoughts on... We covered the Dundee United game on the agenda, which drops every Monday on the cynic.co. Mm. What was your thoughts on the 9-0 game? Because it really was just a joy to behold, Chris.
First of all, I mean, we've beat teams of scorelines like that. You know, we beat Aberdeen 9-0. We beat Hamilton 8-1. Or 8-0, 7-0 against St Johnstone. That was better than every one of them in terms of the football that we played, the pace at which we played it, and the goals that we scored. Now, if I'm being generous to Dundee United, that was a team that were already badly, badly psychologically scarred from what came before them. I think they started out okay, and I think the relentlessness of our attack totally and utterly broke them down. I think, you know, if you're being through some of those, you know, they might have been tighter on us if they weren't the way that, you know, some of the results they hadn't had recently had gone against them, if you want to be fair to them. But overall, it was just an absolute juggernaut from us. I mean, there is no side in the country who would be able to cope with us on that form. No side. And that's the standard that you want to aim for. I mean, I did caveat some of the goals there with how Dundee United were feeling, but I still think we would have taken 4 and 5 off them, even if they hadn't been pumped off Alkmaar and some of the results they had. So it was just, everybody just clicked. And it was just, again, there's been a handful of times where we've said this, it's the football, it's the performance that Ange promised. And I think we're going to start to get that more consistently happening. And I know the hyperbole Monday, I did listen in and things like that. But even now on hyperbole Thursday, even if it's dialed down a bit, people were saying that we could take 10 goals off a team this season, absolutely.
Yeah, it was such a joy to watch. It was such a joy to talk about. It was, you know, like texting my dad and texting, you know, in group chats for people, I'm sure, and just having a really nice time. And, you know, I've thought about it. I've literally watched the highlights. I'd watched them 4 times by Monday. I think I've watched them an extra 3 times already, just from just absolute... Just joy, just like watching it. Fantastic. We played Ross County yesterday. We dominated them as well. We'll talk about that now before we move on to Rangers. Celtic 4, Ross County 1. There was a reaction straight after the game. Again, the cynic.co, we do reactions to every single game, so check it out. Chris Boud, Annabelle and Stuart were in great form. What's your thoughts on the game, Alan, yesterday?
I thought it was excellent. I think when you make that amount of changes to put in the kind of commanding display that we did. Some of the attacking football, again, really, really good to watch. Ange is almost starting to bring me around to the idea that you just sit and enjoy the football and try and forget a wee bit about the scoreline, which when we score the first two and we're winning, I tend to do, but as soon as County get a goal back, I very much start thinking about the scoreline again, please. No, I thought some of the football times was really good. I think I've seen us make loads of sweeping changes like that before in cup games, league games, and we get the win. But what I really like is that we do have a way of playing. We do have a clear plan, which is to get people into areas where they can do what they do best, and I think we did it last night again. The quality wasn't anywhere near the same as it was on Sunday, and I know I was happy with what I seen last night. There was a lot of players that haven't had game time, they're trying to get sharp. There's some people who really excelled, and there's other players that, you know, will have got their game time up, but weren't quite at it. But at no point did I really feel like we were in jeopardy or that we weren't going to see it over the line. I know that County scored a really, really cheap goal, and we'll be disappointed with that because that's a really, really poor goal to lose. But aside from that, I think the quality was there, the same principles of play were there, and I think Ange will look at it, and I think a lot of people would have, no one really let themselves down last night. There were some moments in the game where people's quality wasn't what it should be, but that's fine, you can work with that. So I was really pleased. I've seen us make changes like that before and really struggle. Ross County is not an easy place to go as well.
No.
And to go up there and win 4-1, having made 9 changes from the team that played on Sunday, I think is a real testament to all the things that we've been saying before about the squad. So really, really pleased. Really good goals. Glad to see Giacomakis score as well, because it does his confidence the world of good, and a really nice goal as well. So absolutely delighted with it, and I'll just say I'm really, really enjoying watching this team play. They're really good to watch. Really good to watch.
We started with Sechrist in goal, Ralston, Welsh, Jens and Burnaby, Moy, McGregor, Turnbull, Abada, Giacomakis and Maeda. Were you as happy with the amount of changes, Chris, before? Because, you know, it worked out, and it's worked out really, really well. But there is always that sort of, oh, is it too many changes? Is it, you know, changing the team up a bit too much?
I'm glad we did it. The League Cup, especially in the earlier rounds, is somewhere that you should do that. Because last season was a bit different. But there's an intensity to a lot of the games that we play domestically that there's really got to be some opportunities to give some of these fringe players time on the park, because you could quite easily make an argument that you can never do it. And we didn't do it very much last season, and the reason being for that was everything was so intense, and we had to go 100 miles an hour to win the league. I think we've also been really spoiled with the fact that trebles have become really normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a section of the support, whereas if we did get out last night, of course we would have deserved criticism, but it wouldn't have been a huge, huge disaster. But the great thing about it, I was pleased to see it, because there's real quality there still. That's basically, okay, you had McGregor in the middle of the park, but then you had the second string out there. And although the quality was down from the game on Sunday, there was still a lot of real good football played, as Alan said. So I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we've got the confidence and the ability of the second string to do that. And, you know, we get just rewards there, where a lot of our first team players are going to be fresh going into the game on Saturday.
I'm going to say some names to you. And again, I'm not looking for criticism, but these are players who I think have been talked about, essentially, positively and negatively. Moy specifically has people were going bananas on social media about Moy's performance. I thought he performed well. I thought he did everything he had to do. But you know, it's always that a lot of people sometimes take it to the level above where it's like, well, maybe he actually could maybe step up in the Champions League. And I'm not saying he couldn't. I'm saying I've not seen enough personally evidence of that. And with, you know, the new player coming in, it might make a little bit of difference. Moy, how did he perform for you, Alan?
I thought he done well on the night. You know, the game time is obviously helping him. He's been out for a long time, but I don't think he's competing for a start, in my opinion. I think when you sign a player on a free, there's a lot more goodwill afforded to them than, say,
if it costs £2 million.
Yeah, if, you know, that when we bring in, hopefully, Abildgaard, hopefully, he'll come in and do well. But when you bring in a free, there is always more goodwill extended to them. And I understand that. It's less of a risk. If he doesn't hit the ground running, it doesn't succeed, there's not a huge hit, and he seems a really likeable character. I think the fact that Ange has worked with him before clearly shows an element of trust, and Ange has really worked hard to give him game time. But
do you think he was an insurance policy in case we didn't get another 6? Is that too cynical?
No, I think there probably is enough space that even if we do bring in Abildgaard, that there still will be game time for him. Because I think if you look, we're not between the three. Take the midfield as a three. We don't have great competition. we will from tonight, but prior to that, we didn't. And obviously, Ediguchi, we're having, every time we mention him, we're having to kind of say, well, we don't know yet, but...
I mean, we're going to start mentioning him less and less as well, yeah, I think.
So I think it was a deal that you make at the time. He's been out a long time. It's a free transfer. But I don't... in my opinion, I suppose, keep it brief, he's not competing for a starting place in European games. And I think when you talk about those bigger domestic games, certainly at this stage, with the kind of level of fitness he's at, they would be, I would be very surprised that from the start, if he was to get anything against Rangers and Real Madrid. I think, though, if you're going into the later stages of those games and you're maybe looking for something different, you could trust him. But I don't think that he would be near a start. And I think when we bring in Abelgaard, I think that it's at that point you would then start thinking that game time might become a little bit rarer for him. And, you mentioned that McGregor starting last night against County. He's a captain, so there is a thing there. I think now you would then start thinking about, actually, Cal McGregor is a player that we need to protect and rest a little bit. So the game time that he would get in those games, you might see limited. You know, that next cup game at Motherwell, you're potentially looking at that and thinking, right, we need to rotate those players. So, yeah, I think I thought he was fine. I thought he was okay. Some nice touches at times. Some of those errant backwards passes at times that you need to just be a wee bit careful of. Playing the ball in areas that he can't see. But, you know, you've seen at the weekend, he does have a range of passing going forward that can bring something to the team. So going forward, really good. Just defensively, there's a wee bit of work to be done. But in games like that, I wouldn't say I have any concern about him. I think he looks like he can compete domestically for us anyway.
Chris Burnaby, or do you want to quickly say anything about Moy?
I would largely agree with Alan. I thought he was good last night. Was a couple of slack passes.
The one he hits back to the goalkeeper where he just hits the County player, I don't think I don't know if it was in his eye line or whatever.
I mean, there is a couple of passes where he was just hitting them. It seemed as if he was hitting them blind. But, I mean, for me, I think I said it earlier on, I don't think he's the player that he was, you know, in terms of his legs, basically, and his ability to get around the park. But it does look to me that he's intelligent enough to adapt his game around that and then be able to perform for us. That will probably prohibit him from being a first choice pick, but he does look like the sort of player that's got enough intelligence that means he'll be able to contribute in other games. Burnaby, raw,
yeah,
is the word you would use. You can see that there's a player potentially in there, certainly in an attacking sense.
Is he raw than you thought he'd be?
I think when we first seen him, I kind of gathered that pretty quickly. So even when he started last night, I wasn't surprised. But what we did get to see last night was some real flashes of potential, as I say, quality going forward. You know, he's a young guy. We didn't think we'd maybe see him in the park after events of the last few weeks. So that was interesting to see him on there. Greg Taylor, you know, splits the Celtic support. But I think we can all agree that he's playing at a level just now where you're not screaming, we need this guy in there. And that's going to be good for him because that'll allow him to settle in, build himself up, go forward. Not ready for a first team pick just now, you know, but definitely seen enough in there to think that he might be a player for us.
I actually am a little bit surprised at how raw he is personally. I was expecting him to be a little bit more up to speed, Alan. I mean, he get caught in behind the County fullback, get caught in behind him like at least two times, and there was one time when he was about 10 yards ahead of him.
Yeah.
And that's a worry.
He'd a poor first half. Like, I like that we're using raw as a byword for shite last night. I thought first half he was really poor. He looked quite a bit off it. Couldn't get himself set. Maybe just struggling a wee bit to where he should be at times, and they get caught out, and his quality wasn't there. Second half, I thought he was very good. I thought he was really good the second half. He showed that drive and the energy that you want from him, but he also showed the quality, and he linked well with Callum McGregor. Just a wee interesting thing I noted from last night, Callum McGregor, and I've seen it particularly over the start of this season, he's talking everyone through the game at all times, set pieces, throughout play. He really is stepping up to that role. He was talking a lot to Burnaby last night. I think if a 27-year-old fullback puts in that performance,
you're worried.
You're really, really worried. When it's a player who, it's his first competitive minutes in Europe, and he's, 21, I think. that then gives you the, okay, you don't hit the panic button. He's not going to start in big games anytime soon. His game time will be probably limited. But I think the growth that you've seen in that 90 minutes last night, if you can see that a little bit more, then, you know, there's a player that we can definitely work with there. So, no, I was really down on him. Half time, I thought, and a lot of texts saying the same thing. Second half, I thought he was really, really good. Really comfortable, good link-up play, good going forward. And he showed more of the energy and drive and aggression that you want to see. So, encouraging.
Raw is a byword for shite.
I think that's
like to,
harsh.
I think I'd like to clarify what raw means.
I think
the materials are there, but it's not the finished article.
Yeah.
Christopher Gallagher was using it as a byproduct.
He's Argentinian, and he's
going to be a success in that basis.
That's enough of me.
We are not going to have an Argentinian player that's a failure.
No,
that's
just absolutely not going to happen. Because that doesn't happen when we have Brazilian players, to be fair. Shite.
How many Brazilians we had? Shite and Juninho, is that it?
Aye, and they were both shite for us. But I thought the performance yesterday was, I thought it was really good. I thought we performed really well. I'm starting to feel really comfortable at away grounds the way I maybe wouldn't have over the last couple of years. Like we went to County twice within the space of 3 weeks and we've been comfortable in both games. That's sad. Big change of in terms of, well, from a fan perspective.
Do you know what it shows you how a wee bit spoiled we are, even at this early stage in the season. See, when I heard the lineup, I was coming back, I was playing football beforehand, and I was on the way back, had the radio on, and they read out the team, and I was much more excited after hearing the team, because I felt like, well, I've seen what the first team can do. Let's see what backups can do. And genuinely, as soon as I heard the team, I thought, do you know, I'm really, really looking forward to this now. And I think that does highlight that you feel confident. And like guys like Rio Hatate, I didn't need to see him last night. He's been superb.
Absolutely.
I'm happy for him. Kyogo, Jota, I know what those guys can do and I know they can do it. And they do need a break. If you're not going to rest players last night, when are you going to rest them? Especially with the Saturday, Tuesday. And for the players that are then the kind of that are fighting to get in, for them to turn up last night, and a lot of them haven't played much football and put in that performance, is really, really encouraging. And I think it does bode quite well for us.
You know, you mentioned earlier about Jens coming in and kind of usurping Welsh into kind of third choice pick, I guess. I thought yesterday he made some really weird decisions and some of his passing was a bit kind of askew, whereas I thought Stephen Welsh played really well. That's not, and again, this is probably just they'll be fighting each other for any opportunity that comes the next. Is it still Jens ahead of Welsh for you?
I think overall Jens has got more qualities than Stephen Welsh. However, we've conceded 2 goals this season and he's not looked good to both of them, shall we say. So
against Ross County.
Against Ross County. He didn't have a clue. I mean, it was Ralston's man that won the header, but he really didn't know where the is it Giamatti that was it?
Giacoviti.
I don't even know who Giamatti is, but there we go.
Paul Giamatti, he's an actor.
Is he?
Yes.
Right. Aye, I didn't know that, so it wasn't that. I just made the name up. I'm not doing very well with names this evening, but anyway, we'll move on. He had no clue where he was. He just completely lost him. So, for me, more so than the competition between Welsh and Jens, it cements that Starfelt should definitely be in there with Vickers. I mean, I think I'd already came to that conclusion, and I think we probably all agree in terms of that being the partnership. That just kind of underlined it for me. I think overall he's contributed and he's looked good for us, but we are going to come up against teams like that. You know, Livingston, we've come up against a lot of teams domestically that have got that aerial presence, the big man up top. We've just got rid of a centre-half who wasn't particularly comfortable with it. In fairness, in fact, he did quite well against Lafferty, you know, in terms of that, but that's twice he's been done that way, and yeah, we concern there.
I think probably more than anything what you need from centre-halves, and it's not Ange, it's not as trust. And Ange Postecoglou trusts Carol Starfelt and Cameron Carter-Vickers. Now, he trusts them because he knows what they're good at and he knows what they're not good at. And he trusts that they know that as well. Now, Jens, I think, has shown an ability with the ball that maybe would put him above probably both CCV and Starfelt with the ball, as in his ability, range of passing, ability to step out. What Ange probably doesn't quite trust at this stage is that Jens knows when and when not to do that.
Yeah.
And when you've got big European, fine, against County last night, and I don't mean to sound as dismissive as I do, but domestically, you'll be able to make those mistakes and get away with it. And we talked about it last week. When you're playing Champions League football, if you take an extra touch on the ball and it's not spot on, or you try and step in and you get caught wrong side of the ball, you will lose a goal. And I think that is where there is potential, I think, for Jens longer term, if he continues in a, you know, an upwards trajectory, that he could be a starting centre-half, even amongst the squad at the moment. But he's not there yet, and I think it will be because things that Samani pointed out there, and I know other people have noticed as well, last night, stepping in, but not in his head, not knowing exactly what he wants to do with the ball. I really like him, and I'm really encouraged by him. That's a big red flag going into big games. You need to know exactly
what to do, yeah.
It's fine for like a winger, a centre midfielder to do that because they've got cover behind them. If you step in because you see the opportunity as a centre-half and it's actually, it looks like it's opening up, it's not, it's a pressing trap.
It's a trap.
You're going to get caught.
It's a trap.
No, that's exactly what it is. And that's what, that takes time, and he's still a young player, but he's got a lot of attributes, but it's about working with him so that he knows when to do that and, more importantly, when not to do that. And I think that's why that centre half paid in at the moment, is as long as they're both fit, it's fixed.
Chris?
I mean, we're obviously playing in the Champions League and there's going to be a lot of players who've never played at that level, so it's entirely possible that Starfelt and Vickers can be exposed for some of the things that they do at that level as well. The only difference between them and Jens is they're not doing that consistently at domestic level, and we've seen that from Jens. But you're right, he's, what is he, 21?
Yeah, he's 23, I think.
23. Still fairly young, especially for a centre half.
It was between there throwing him in his cap and get these things.
He's 24, he's done.
Let me consult the manual. No, he's 23, he's fine.
I've just looked at the Mikey Johnston-ometer and he's just in there. He's just in there. So, yeah, you know, he's a guy who, you know, he's got time to develop. You know, he can maybe take his game to another level and maybe start to ask the question whether he's in there just now. But, yeah, raw. That's what I would describe
him as. Okay, Ross Kenny, as I say, there was a reaction we did afterwards, I think, after the game. It was a really good reaction with Chris Bowd hosting and Annabelle and Stuart. Check it out. It's on thecynic.co with every reaction to every game this season. Saturday's huge. Saturday is massive. I'm very excited, still a bit nervous. First question I'm going to ask you, Alan, how are you feeling?
Nervous. Not until any point, until when you look to me in the eye there and says, how do you feel? And now I've bottled it. I'm really excited. I think it's a good opportunity. It's a good opportunity to kind of see if the performances that we've put in are firstly an improvement on our levels last year, but also to see if we can handle more pressure. And I don't mean pressure as in the players or the occasion. I mean pressure as in on the park, because some of our poorer performances were against Rangers last year with largely the same squad of players. Mm. So I think it's a very good barometer for us to see, have we, and I think sometimes as a sport we get a little bit hung up on this, finding solutions to what Rangers do against us.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
It's just about, can we put ourselves and keep doing the same things and try and handle better quality players pressing you up a little bit higher? And if we can do that, I'm really excited for Saturday because I think it's a good opportunity. I think we are playing as good football domestically as I've seen us play in quite a number of years. And we've got a good opportunity at a very early stage in the season to get our necks ahead in the title race, but also to reassure ourselves that, you know, the improvements that we've seen are not just against teams who, you know, Hearts weakened, all the kind of things that people might at the back of their minds think.
Yeah.
You've got a good opportunity to go against who you'll be directly competing for the title with and show that you can do that and that our levels have improved. It's a really good a validation point for the players, the fans, everybody, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's a huge opportunity, I think.
Chris, yourself?
Nervous about it. I mean, we tend as a support to either be really despondent or supremely confident. You know, we're going to scud them, this, that, or the next thing, or that point that you make. They've got a way of playing, setting up that we can't beat. But for me, you need to acknowledge that they are a football team who got to a European final last season, stopping better football and teams from playing football, which is what I think they're going to try and do to us on Saturday.
Yeah.
Now, when you see what we're capable of on against Dundee United, and even last night in patches with obviously a second string, they specialise in stopping us doing that. That's so. You're not going to sit here and make outrageous predictions about how many goals we're going to put past them. Now, we managed to play our best football against them in one game last season. You're right, some of the performances, now I know we won at Ibrox, but I think we defended fairly comfortably that day, but I don't think we played what would be described as our natural style of football. Earlier in the season, you can maybe get it away, but you know, apart from that one game at Celtic Park when we were phenomenal, we haven't played sparkling stuff against them. So, and Saturday, I'm nervous about it because they do have the potential to completely stifle us. But there's also something in the back of my head that says, I'm just going to contradict what it says. Something in the back of my head that says we could go out there and rip them apart.
We're going to win.
Say it.
You
said earlier there would be a 10-0 this season. I'm happy to get out of the way.
Yes,
so that we're not speculating about it.
That'll be an albatross around our necks as well. Just getting it done on Saturday. Yeah.
obviously, if we win on Saturday, we go 5 points ahead. From a goal perspective, we've scored 21. This is just in the league. We've scored 21 and we've conceded 1. Rangers have scored 14 and they've conceded 3. They obviously drew with Hibs. We've got a goal difference of 20. They've got a goal difference of 11. Question for you, Alan. If you could decide that one of their players wasn't playing and take them out.
Do we mean they just can't play in the game? Yes.
Who would you take out their team? I'll tell you how they lined up against a PSV if you want.
Yes. Right, I'll not do my reflex boo every name here.
You can boo it if you want.
I bet you when he picks the player, he's going to give a big, long, convoluted, caveated explanation so that it doesn't seem like he thinks that's a good player. He can't even give them that.
They had McLaughlin, Barisic, Goldson, Sands, Tavernier, Lundstrom, Tillman, Kamara, Lawrence, Colak and Kent. They played a 4-3-3 against PSV. Against Ross County, they kind of played a similar kind of 4-2-3-1, but it was basically
I get it.
who would you take out? Who's the one that you kind of think he could do a wee bit of damage?
I think if you maybe look at their game so far, the player that's kind of gave them a bit of life is probably Tillman, I think. I'm not going to speculate because I don't want to sit and say something on here that gets clipped next week and sounds really stupid. But he's a player that's obviously gave them something in big games this season. So, yeah, I'd pick him. Why not?
What about you, Chris?
Just pick a name.
Colak. It's great. I thought that question would have been better.
Terrible segment. Really terrible. Really took away from the 10-0 part right before it. But,
yeah. See in regards to say their just match sharpness. Are you worried about the fact that they've played a lot of games so far this season at maybe at what you consider a higher level, and we've been performing fantastically domestically? Are you worried that it's going to take us time to get up to that? No.
And I think I don't mean to go Neil Lennon a press conference on you there, but
no.
If we don't win on Saturday or we don't perform on Saturday, it won't be fitness. It won't be anything like that. It will be because we don't perform, which might be down to a number of factors, but it won't be match sharpness, it won't be fitness, because we've looked really good, we have looked really sharp. And do you know what, if we're in a position where we don't have the ability to go 90 minutes with 5 subs in that time, then do you know what, Tuesday could be a pretty chastening experience. So match sharpness, I don't think it'll be an issue at all.
Chris, I mean, I put this in the rundowns for all the pods we do, but like, our approach is just going to be the same under Ange Postecoglou. We're going to play that high pressing, not stopping, energetic, aggressive style, and that's just how we are. And
I think that's how we're going to approach it. Certainly at home, it'll be interesting to see how they line up. Are they going to play one holder, or are they going to play two? I think they might play two.
I think they'll play two.
I think they are going to just try and nullify us. That's probably what they do best. So I would agree with Alan, though. You can't use the excuse that they've played more games, certainly at a higher level. If we're talking about the PSV game, if we're being perfectly honest, it won't come down to that. I think it'll come down to quality on the day, tactically, you know.
Yeah,
all that's what it will simply be. If we get beat badly, or, you know, we don't perform really well or whatever, it'll be down to something that we've not done right in the day, rather than them being at a more optimum level than we are just now.
I do reserve the right to also blame the referee, potentially. I'd just like to stick.
Oh, yeah.
Put that out there. I think... we can't go into it talking about how good we are and how well we've been playing, and then if we don't play well on Saturday, say, it's because of that. Aside from, you know, something that happens at the game that we don't see, which I'm sure will never happen in these big games, but you then have to play both sides. You have to actually say, well, if we don't play well on Saturday, just because we haven't played well, then you look at it, then Ange Postecoglou and his team looks at it and say, why was that? What do we need to do the next time we come up against that to try and come up with solutions, as we talked about it, I think, a wee bit with the European games last year, where little challenges in-game present themselves, and there has been... last year there was a tendency when we come up against something that we didn't like, we weren't able to work around it. We weren't able to come up with solutions to it. And, if you talk about that Scottish Cup semi-final, for example, didn't play well. The last home game against Rangers, different circumstances, but we didn't perform to our best. Bodo didn't perform to our best in the first leg, take the second leg. So that's what, you know, that's a challenge that I would hope that if we come up against that this year, we've thought about it in advance and think, here's a couple of little options we've got. Rangers have, in my opinion as well, some glaring defensive issues that you need to test on Saturday.
In between the centre half and the fullback?
Without doubt. The fullbacks, I think you need to attack. You need to present challenges for them the wrong side of the ball.
Yeah.
Because obviously their strength is going forward. We know that. We've always known that. And, you know, we've always joked about some of the goals Tavernier's gifted us over the years, but it's different now. You need to look at his ability to track a runner. And when you've got Dyson Maeda, who not only makes the most intelligent runs that you could imagine for a left winger, but he's also lightning quick. That is something as a defender you'd be a little bit concerned about. And I feel that right-hand side, you need to test it. I'm not to say that Rangers won't resolve it or do something to try and prevent it, but if you get that opportunity, you need to... The frustration that I seen from Dyson Maeda last night when a ball didn't go over the top when he was away, if I see that on Saturday against Rangers, I'd be pretty annoyed, because that is an area I would like to attack. And if it's Jota on the right, obviously a bit of a spoiler, that's what I think it'll be. I think it'll be Maeda left and Jota right. I think that's what you need to... That's where the game for us is there to be had. Those guys getting in behind, cutting back, or doing whatever they do once they get in behind, that's where the game should be tested up. There's so many other ways you can attack them as well, but that has to be the threat. That's where we need to look at those passes that we've seen goals from this year. Kilmarnock away, for example, that type of ball against this Rangers team, if you can get a Cal McGregor or a, you know, Rio Hatate or Matt O'Reilly in those half spaces and they can turn and play a ball, that's where it needs to go in the first instance, in my opinion.
Chris, in that regard, Alan's just kind of mentioned a couple of names. Do you think this team picks itself? Obviously, Haksabanovic, we've literally seen, you know, 10 minutes of him. So he will certainly probably more than likely be on the bench. Mm. But who do you want to see line up on Saturday?
I don't think the team picks itself, because there's debate over who would take some of the positions. I think there's people out there that would call for Abada to start, given what he did last weekend.
Also given what he did against them in the 3-0 game as well, just I think that weighs in people's head.
Maeda's a wee bit out of favour with some in the support, but I would agree with Alan, and I think one of the main reasons that he would is because I think we're going to go hell for leather at the start, much like we did in the 3-0 game last season. and the work rate.
You're getting hammed up.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what we're going to do. And I think the work, I think one of the key successes for us that night was the running that you got from the team. And I think Maida, you know, exemplifies that. You know, the work rate and the energy that you get from him is absolutely so unbelievable.
You'd all agree that the back five picks itself.
Yeah.
Do you want to just run through it? Let's go.
Hart.
I'll take over.
Let's make some noise for the boys.
Hart.
Yay.
Taylor.
Yay.
Starfelt.
Yay.
Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Yep.
Josip Juranovic.
You struggled with the Carter, Cameron Carter-Vickers.
He's all over the place here as well. We're getting surnames, then we're getting full names, then we're getting songs.
We're
in the midfield now, Christopher. Do you want me to finish this?
No, because I want to make a point about the midfield. Abelgaard.
No.
There's no chance he's going to play in the Rangers game.
No.
Okay, so that's...
For me, it's McGregor, O'Reilly and Hatate.
Alan, would you agree, disagree, thoughts?
I don't think there's any debate in that area of the park. Despite the fact we've spent 45 minutes of this podcast saying how much strength we've got, that is your primary starting three.
I agree. And then the forward line, you would have Jota, Kyogo and Maida.
Yeah. And it's not a criticism of Leal Abada. I think if people want him to start, I understand it completely. You score a hat-trick, you deserve a start. Sometimes football is a wee bit cruel. And I think in this occasion it might be cruel to Leal Abada, but he'll be ready and waiting. I just think both sides of the ball, Maida on that side against that fullback, it's
Abada's got a very specific set of skills. Don't you think, like, you use them in a very specific way, whereas I think, oh, fuck, well I'll just leave then.
I'm just laughing. Is that not off a film? I have a very specific set of skills. I don't know.
He just says, isn't it? I don't know, Chris.
Ace Ventura 4, I think that was it.
Plumber. Detective.
Plumber detective. I would agree. Agree with Alan. Just agreed with Alan.
Just the front three as well?
Aye. I think you're directly kind of talking about Maida up against Tavernier, and yeah, that makes sense. I just think his general work rate as well, though, is something that, you know, even when he's maybe not creatively having his best game, he will, you know, he'll run for 90 minutes and still look almost as fresh at the end as he did at the start. And I think that's what you really need.
Just exactly on that point, it's about the overall package, and the atmosphere on Saturday will presumably be wild. As an away player, presumably in these games as well, like I said, I think I talked about it, talking about Champions League, you want to get that first touch and you want to drop it off and do all the, kind of remember that it doesn't matter if there's 60,000 people giving me abuse, I can still do all the things that I've done all week. If though, when you take that first touch, you know, you've got someone pressing you immediately and putting you under that stress and you don't take that touch or you go to clip it up the line, which look, Rangers love doing that. Conor Goldson gets the ball. If he's any pressure, he will just send it up the line and they'll play off second balls, but that's what they do. If though you go and try and play the ball up the line and Kyogo or anyone blocks it, the noise in the stadium will just amp up again because there is nothing like in the world like seeing a defender take a slightly heavy touch, go to send it, and then they get shut down. Even though it's just a throw-in and they've still got it, sends it. And I think Dyes and Maida and like Scottish football have this crossover where that work rate, but it's intelligent. It's not, he's not doing it just because, you know, Kenny Miller used to do it and, you know, just to run, you know. Dyes and Maida though, there's a purpose to it and there's a reason we do it, and we do it as a team. We press as a unit. And I think it's just, I think it's a game that you would definitely want to start him. If it's not working out, you've got options on the bench. GG, Abada, there's so many options. And I wouldn't particularly think that if you have to go to them, it's necessarily a bad sign in the game. We might do what we do, 60, 65 minutes. And if we do, we've got good quality coming on.
Trust the process. I spoke to Christian Wolf earlier today to look ahead to the game against Rangers. And this is what we had to say. Stats Corner. We are back in Stats and Tactics Corner with our good friend Christian Wolf, and we are going to focus on Rangers, the game on Saturday, the Glasgow Derby, the first Glasgow Derby of the season. Plenty to talk through, plenty to look at, but before we even get to any of that, Christian, how are you feeling coming into this game against Rangers at this time with everything that's happened?
I don't really know, to be honest, because I've been really comforted by the way Celtic have played this season so far. That's not just the last one against Dundee United, but overall, I thought in every single game, you can so clearly see that Ange's system, like the movements, you know, the chance creation, preventing chances, everything is, I think, working better to another more consistent level than it was last season. It's just this big unknown that the Derby and the Real Madrid said, you will meet two completely different teams that will probably play in a completely different way. Now, I'm hopeful that just as Celtic have overcome, like found so many solutions to these other teams, like lesser teams, that they will be prepared for this as well. But it's just, I haven't done it yet this season. So, and I won't say the season starts now, but it's definitely a brand new phase of the season starting on Saturday.
We did, this is kind of going off topic, but it's kind of relative in a way. We did an interview with Lucy Ashford-Clifford, which will be on the cynic.co next week. And she was talking about, she's just joined the Celtic FC women's team and she started very brightly. She's been fantastic. But she basically said that she had no real idea of how big the derby was. They've not actually played the derby yet, but she says it's quite palpable just, you know, at training and, you know, talking to, you know, some of the other players. How different is this game in regards to everything that's around it? You know, the fans, the media attention, because there's no other game like this game, you know, I hasten to say, in world football for a number of reasons. Do you think there is an extra added pressure on these players to perform, essentially?
I think there always is in big games. But, and it's quite clear, as you say, every person who comes to the club, every person who comes to Glasgow,
yeah,
has an impression of what the derby is going to be from the outside. And then they come in and they go, oh okay. It is probably unique. Being in world football. I mean, as a player, you will get used to that as well. And you know me with my rational mind. For me, it's not, yes, you have all the outside pressure and it's you know, it's the cauldron, it's the pressure, but just by the mere fact that against the 10 other teams in the league, you were pretty much facing inferior side with inferior tactics, with inferior players. And then suddenly on the top of all this hype and pressure and everything else, you will face a team that's completely different in quality and style and what they try to do to you and then what you have to do to that team. So that's the kind of, that kind of switch from domestic, you know, what you usually pay, then suddenly this. Obviously that happens a bit more in Europe as well, but I don't know if you know, Christopher, but Celtic haven't played in Europe so far. So for me, yeah, it's as impressive, but it's also that sudden change in your actual the quality of the opposition and what you expect it to do.
I mean, I obviously we'll get to, you know, let's focus on Rangers' start to the season, just how they're doing compared to Celtic. But Rangers will essentially treat this like a European game, the way that maybe we wouldn't.
Yes. I think they most definitely would. I think they will treat it as a European away game. And I think they did that in the last three derbies last season as well. Whereas Celtic will try to play their own style, but they'll also be acutely aware. Like Claire actually asked Ange on the press aware last week that you will face a different tactical setup. You will highly likely face a much higher press. And how do you prepare the players for that when you haven't faced that in any games last season?
Yeah.
So Celtic will try to play the way they do, but also they will be prepared to face a completely different opposition and then what the opposition is trying to do to you and how well they're able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at the start of the season, start of the league campaign. You love stats, Christian, I'm led to believe. Talk me through stats, comparisons, etc.
Exactly. Who doesn't? By the way, who doesn't want
to? Well,
so, you know, Rangers are where they should be. Behind Celtic. What I mean by that is 2 points behind Celtic on the table, on Stevens Russell expected points table. the best expected points model after, even better this year. He has ranged as 1.8 expected points behind Celtic as well. So, yeah, small sample collection, but it's everything we see is, you know, the table, it's not lying, Christopher. Rangers is where it should be. So I guess what you're looking at for these first five games, how have Rangers handled the more defensive teams in the Premiership, as we talked about there? And here's a spoiler, they haven't handled it as well as Celtic. You know, Celtic had created 4 XG per game. Rangers created 2.2. So per game. So Celtic's got 21 non-penalty goals from 19.6 XG. Rangers have scored 13 non-penalty goals from 10.9 XG just in total. If you look at defensively, Celtic conceded 0.4 XG per game, Rangers 0.9. So while Rangers has quote-unquote got the points they deserve, their chance creation and, you know, the chance repression, I guess, is well below Celtic so far. So, you know, in shots, getting into a position's half, final third, penalty box, Celtics all have now higher numbers than the Rangers. Celtics, like the possession stats, Celtic got slightly more passes, but Rangers got slightly more possession, higher pass rate, than they spend a half a second more on the ball per possession. So Celtic's pressing number is also higher. So I think that's, you know, the kind of, you can start teasing out the kind of, maybe you want to tease out this conclusion, which isn't the right way to do it, but that Celtic is dominating these teams, whereas Rangers are getting past them. And the really interesting thing for me, looking at the stats, is the quality and the quantity of the chances Rangers create and concede compared to Celtic. So Celtic's average chance this season has an average XG per shot of 0.18. Translated, that is huge numbers. That is way above average, even for them. Rangers per shot, 0.11, which is a bit below the average. So you can just look at a shot map, but from the league, Celtic's got 27 shots from outside the box so far this season. Rangers got 45, right? Defensively, it's the same thing. Celtic's conceded 6 shots in what we kind of call the danger zone. So that's the width of the 6-yard box inside the penalty box. Celtic's conceded 6 shots from there. Rangers conceded 17 shots from there. Celtic average chance against, 0.05 XG. That's a very, very good stat defensively.
Yeah.
Celtic's average chance against, 0.15. That's a bad stat against. So I think everything you kind of see is that Rangers is kind of struggling to break these lesser teams down more, and they're actually conceding higher quality chances against them as well. So they're not scraping by. You know, they got what they deserve, but they're not dominating these teams in any way as good as Celtic are.
So I was just going to say, from a purely layman's point of view, having watched a number of their games this season, specifically the Hibs game and the PSV game, they don't look like they're going to concede a lot of goals, but they also don't look like they're going to score a lot of goals, which I kind of guess is backed up by the stats.
Yes, I mean, well, I actually see the XG against. They have a XG against so far 0.9, not including any penalties. That is high. Like Celtic had, I think, 0.6 in the league last season. They got 0.4 this season. So while you kind of get an impression sometimes that Celtic score more loads, but they're actually, you know, more susceptible to conceding in the league so far. That's not backed up by the stats. So I said this before in the pod, but, and it's very early in the season, I'd be very, very surprised if Celtic dropped more points than Rangers against the other 10 teams in the league. I just think they're set up to break those teams down so much better than Rangers. So I think on that side, Celtic kind of got, it's not got it sorted, but they're finding those solution. I think Rangers will drop more points against other teams.
So Rangers' best chance is essentially just to beat us the 4 times?
Exactly. And that's where you get into the kind of their start to Europe this season as well, because, you know, there's 12 points up for grab. Celtic take 12 more points than Rangers from the other 10 teams. I mean, they might, but by the start. But I think these games are going to be crucial, and Rangers will treat them like the games they've had a lot of success in so far, they will treat them as a European game. And I think their team is better set up to get results there. However, let's have a look at the stats in Europe so far. Again, it's just four games. But, for example, against Union St. Gallen, you know, they lose 2-0 away. The XG against is 2.9, they got 0.3. So absolutely deserved 2-0 loss. At home, they win 3-0, 2.9 with the penalty, 0.8. So overall against St. Gallen, they win by one goal. Their XG is 0.5 less over two games. So it's very even. It falls down on Rangers' side. Against PSV, you know, 2-2 at home, XG at home, 0.6 to PSV's 1.6. So, okay, it's single game XG, so you have to be careful, but they do concede 1 XG more. Away, they create 1 XG, get one goal. They concede 1.7, but don't concede. So, I mean, overall, so far in Europe, they are kind of overperforming a little bit, you know. So they've scored 6 on 4.8 XG. They conceded 4 on 7 XG. And if you actually look at the games, I know a couple of those goals have been completely handed. So they've been competitive in Europe, but there's also an element of
luck
in there. So
luck.
Yeah, so
luck.
Let's go with that. I mean, and again, the quality of their chances in Europe has been the same level of quality of chances they create domestically and the chances they conceded as well. So they are conceding high quality chances so far. So they're competitive in Europe. I think, you know, that's the kind of game plan they like the most, but also that they haven't been, you know, like a machine like in Europe. Again, you know, the kind of chips has fallen down on the right side.
You know, in regards to some personnel, Ryan Kent's always brought up because, you know, a lot of people just think he's, you know,
an incel.
Yeah, well, yeah. Absolutely a monster drinking goth. But in regards to how he's been performing, has he been performing well, do you think? And I'm not even looking for like a deep dive into that, but just from your eye when you've seen him play, because if I was a Rangers fan, then I would be dead and I'd be a weird ogre thing. But ultimately, I would probably be very disappointed with how much he's dropped off.
Yes, but I also think with Kent and all the other ones, they will exist in a different kind of microcosm when they come against Celtic. And I don't think he was particularly impressive against PSV or so what I've seen him so far. I guess four Rangers against Celtic is more about the system and how they set up. So, and what Kent are good at, I think, is the pressing side of things. So he does do that. So I think that's the interesting bit there. I think there's things you can take from Celtic's form domestically and Rangers' form domestically that will impact this like game. But I also think, as I said, Rangers were much treated as a European game. They've had four of those now. They've had two of them away. Celtic haven't had this test yet. They might pass it with flying colours. And I think there's positive signs of what we've done so far. But this is a test for Celtic because they'll face a team of a higher quality, especially, but also one that's likely to press Celtic a lot higher. And this is the first real test of playing this game against that high quality, high press. I think I mentioned this before as well, but Celtic's start of the season makes me confident about Celtic's ability once they're in the opposition's half and the final third, because the system is working so well. It's just still be working against Rangers, even though they're better players. Where I think this game might be won or lost in how effective Celtic are in getting out under what we expect to be a higher pressure.
Yeah. I think that's probably everyone's biggest fear.
I mean, you've seen it in the last three derbies. Like, essentially, Celtic want to have control of the ball. Rangers want to create chaos. So Rangers do that. They want to press Celtic high and aggressively. Yeah, to try to win the ball, that'd be great, like they did against PSV. But also to get Celtic to go along early. All right, so create that kind of back and forth to chaos. Rangers last season went early themselves if pressed high by Celtic. So they want to minimize that risk of Celtic winning the ball up high. And so they'd rather go high. And they kind of maybe plan to go longer earlier, so they're a bit more set up for that and winning kind of the second ball. Celtic response to that in the last three derbies was very good at times. But other times, I think there was an element of, especially the goalkeeper and centre-backs, kind of falling into the trap of going long too long, not kind of trusting that process at the crucial times in those three derbies. So I think that's what Ange will have been worked on this season. We're going to get some of the answers on Saturday.
See the difference between the 3-0 game and the 1-1 game in regards to us playing out from the back. I mean, I'm not asking you, obviously, you've probably not watched those games in detail recently, but I remember the 1-1 game, and there was far more uncertainty, I would say, than the 3-0 game. Is that just because we hit Rangers like a howitzer from the get-go? I'm trying to kind of put it into you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, I did analysis trade on all those four games, actually. But my analysis on the 3-0 game was everything Celtic did in the Rangers half. I don't think he had one note or anything about what happened playing out. Because
yeah.
It seemed like it was so simple for Celtic to get into those positions quickly. Whereas if you'll go back and look at my analysis of maybe all three of those last derbies, it's a lot to do what Rangers tried to do in Celtic, especially trying to stop them from playing out and Celtic's response to that. So I think I think the same thing can happen. See, if Celtic gets into their own half, in the Rangers half, in the third, consistently, and they managed to do that, I think at that point, they look so good. All those movements, all the quality of the players, they know the system. So kind of, once you're in Rangers' final third, I was like, hey, that'll be fine. For me, it's more the difference is, how do you get there? How do you get there and control the ball consistently at any good positions?
Yeah, I mean, in regards to... We've had this conversation a number of times, and you know you're probably going to give me the same answer, and rightly so. It's how do we beat that press? Like,
No, and I think maybe the first question is: will the press be the same as last season?
Yeah.
So, I think the PSV game is probably the most relevant because I think you'll probably see the same team, right? You expect the team to be from front, Colak, Tillman behind him, Kenton Lawrence on each side, and then Kamara and Lundstrom behind them again. It'll kind of look a bit like a 4-2-3-1 starting up. So, and then the way PSV set up against that was they have their fullbacks high and wide, and they have two deep midfielders and one attacking midfielder. So one or two of the deep midfielders would drop to receive the ball from the centre-backs, sometimes very deep, very wide. And the wingers, at least one of them, would come inside and let the PSV fullback be the widest one. And then the striker and the attacking mid, their man, be in the middle. So that's a slight difference with Celtic, where the wingers usually stay wide and the fullbacks come inside to help McGregor. But the interesting thing that happened with Rangers did against PSV is that defensively, it turns into a 1-4-1-4. So what I mean by that is Colak is up by himself. Right, he's the lone presser, and his job is essentially to stand between Carter Vickers and Starfelt. He'll press them from the side, but he'll make sure that Carter Vickers can't get the ball to Starfelt. Starfelt can't get the ball directly to CCB. I think Tillman will be mostly on McGregor, but as we saw in this game where PSV had two defensive midfielders, it's Kamara who jumps up on the second midfielder. So if I think what will happen if, for example, if Greg Taylor comes inwards, Kamara will come and jump up beside Tillman. So it'll be a line of four. So you got Colak, you got the two wingers, and then you got Tillman and Kamara in the middle, and then you got Lundstrom behind there. And I think that was, you know, I showed you a couple of screenshots and I sent you kind of a diagram of how I think it'll be. And I think the key for Celtic here, what they need to do is not get stuck in that kind of 4-1-2-3 build-up. What I mean by that is you need a player beside McGregor in the build-up. Otherwise, Tillman can try and crowd out McGregor, and Lundstrom and Kamara can just stay on Hatate and O'Reilly. And the Rangers wingers and fullbacks can just stay on the Celtic fullbacks and wingers out wide. So the key for me is Taylor and or JJ Juranovic coming in, or Hatate, for example, falling beside McGregor. But what you want to do is pull Kamara up. You want those two players, McGregor plus one, to try and receive the balls from the centre-back. the reason why I think that'd be good, because I showed you a couple of pictures where you, from the PSV game, where Kamara jumps up and makes a line of four. And for a few seconds every time, Lindstrom has to cover the whole width of the pitch by himself. And he created so many opportunities for kind of PSV to get up. I don't think they did it very effectively, but you know, I've done some diagrams and some dots, and you can see how much space there is there. And what that does as well, it triggers Goldson and Sands. It makes them having to make a decision. Okay, Lundstrom is all alone on this, and he's got one, two players around him. Do I jump up? Does Goldson go up to Sands? So often what you see was the fullback, either Barisic or Tavernier, coming inside and high up to kind of stand beside Lundstrom, and Kamara jumped up. So I think Celtic, for me, need to kind of do what they're doing, essentially, and press up the need to get one of the fullbacks in the middle, and then try to need to crowd out around Lundstrom. Because if the fullbacks come in, you know, suddenly your wingers are free. If Kyogo drops deep and pulls, for example, Goldson with him, you can put a long ball behind Goldson and for Maeda or Jota, for example. So I think, I think that's what we need to do. So it's just essentially something need to play what to do. Put guys in the middle of the pitch, pull Kamara up, and make the Rangers defense make those decisions, trigger those decisions, essentially.
I mean, so essentially, from, you know, if we break their press, we're going to destroy them.
I honestly think so. I also think that, because what I've seen so far about the press is, against PSV, I wasn't that impressed.
No,
I mean, there's a case, obviously. I mean, Tillman actually steals the ball for the goal. But overall, I don't think he's a great presser. You know, Kolak does what he's asked to do, but it's not like he's Kyogo either. He's a bit of a big lump. You know what I mean? It's not fast or super smart in his pressing. Kent, Kamara, Lindstrom are pretty good pressers. Like, Kamara knows when to jump out, when Bayoso knows not when to follow. He's a smart player. But you know, Lawrence, he's not a super presser. And I think Sands, a lot less aggressive and assured himself in jumping up than Bassi was. I'm happy Bassi's not playing. Golson's just a liability.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so positive. So I'm sure if this press is going to be as aggressive as the last derby or as good, it's going to be calculated, it's going to be organized, and Celtic need to do those movements so it doesn't get predictable. But it wasn't frightening against PSV in any way.
Yeah, I found PSV's quality to be really... They were found wanting, is how I describe it. Just to kind of wrap up, because we are, as always, we went over time. What's your kind of final thoughts on the game on Saturday?
I think it will be a lot around that. I mean, the Rangers are what we talked about so far in terms of how do you get out of that press that we think will be there. I think a lot of it will be around... You do also have to focus on Rangers offensively and what they like to do offensively. Is that to kind of, you know, Tillman will be there, you know, between Lindstrom and Kamara and Kolak in that kind of line between the midfield and the striker. But you'll often have one of the wingers coming in as well, often Lawrence. So you have kind of two defensive midfielders, Lindstrom and Kamara, and then ahead of that, Tillman and Lawrence in the middle. So which is quite clever because you want to stagger kind of the attacking lines. So I think for a few seconds, they'll try to kind of create a four against three. So they're four midfielders with Lawrence coming in against Celtic's three midfielders. So I think that's one thing you have to be aware of offensively. Decisions that comes in then, okay, should the fullbacks come in? Should one of the centre-backs jump out and stuff? So, you know, they have the players to hurt Celtic there. But it's going to sound like a cliche, but I think if Celtic trust the process, Christopher, and Abdou managed to execute it to 90-95%, I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I mean, I think the same dangers are still there, like in the last three derbies, that the you know, Rangers get into their rhythm and they make them go along and they kind of crowd them out up there. But even in those last three derbies, I thought, see if Celtic just stick to what they should be doing, have the confidence to do that, have that move in the machine, I think they could easily get out and create lots of really nice transitions against Rangers. And once they're in the final third, they're so good now. They're so effective. So I'll be really confident. So, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic. It's the best way to be. Thank you, as always, Christian Wolf. We will speak to you very soon, sir.
Absolutely. I'll be in Parker's on Saturday this way, so I can't wait.
Thanks to Christian, as always. Stats and Tactics Corner, fantastic as usual. We also, with the Rangers game, we'll be doing the Lunch Club on Friday afternoon, Friday lunchtime will be out on Friday afternoon, looking ahead to the Rangers game. We'll have a reaction to the Rangers game straight after it. So lots of coverage and build up at thecynic.co. Check it out, and get your piece of the Cynic pie. God, I regret it. I instantly regret saying that. Celtic versus Real Madrid is a game that I am equally so excited for and equally petrified for, and there's something about that kind of is poetic in a way. Excitement, fears, Alan.
You kind of just say that, like, you kind of just say it's poetic in a way.
Get a piece of the Cynic pie. Yeah, it's not about a good couple of minutes.
Hold the board up, there's a sub.
Yeah, I've worked myself into a weird corner with that one. But as Chris, we'll start with yourself. You know, Real Madrid, we've played Barcelona so many times over the years when they've been European champions. We've beat them when they've been European champions. We've beat AC Milan when they've been European champions. You know, this is...
Don't you worry about that.
This is, don't you worry about that. There is a massive excitement. However, you do have that sort of PTSD of looking at our last Champions League group, and just there's a little bit of a shudder. But at the same time, I think, as you said at the start of this podcast, there's a sort of renewed excitement and hope that we can at least go toe-to-toe in certain ways with these teams. Compete, thoughts?
Yeah, this one's, I mean, if the only other game in the group that would be more of a kind of gimme in terms of just what will be would be Real Madrid away, you know? This one you don't want cuffed, basically, for me. Now, that's my baseline, right? I want to come away with that and we've not been gubbed. But I also do... No, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
This team talk's no inspired in me, yes, have to say.
The hairs on my neck stood up because I had a hairdryer at the back of your neck. No, that's my minimum expectation, right? And the problem is we don't know. You can speculate on how you think we're going to play in this group. But fundamentally, our benchmark, our previous benchmark, the phrase you used last week, I think, Alan, is the Bodo Glimt game. We're going to be better than that, but we just don't know how some of these players are going to stand up. One, in the Champions League. Two, to the pressure of playing in the Champions League.
Three, to the fans' expectations in the Champions League.
Correct. So there is a level of unknown about it. So... As I said, my minimum is I want to come away where we're not going, that was a real sore doing. But I do have a feeling that we're going to go and we're going to play our game and it's going to show up well. I'm not going to make a prediction in terms of what the result may or may
not
be.
No, I'm not looking for that.
You know, but what I do think is we'll go and we won't come back. We won't come out after the game and go, we're miles short for that level. You know, we might get beat. You know, there might be some real level of quality from Real Madrid that we just can't cope with. But I think for large parts of the game, we're going to look as if we're not out of place there. And I think we'll then build on that going forward. Now, listen, I might be totally underselling it. You know, Celtic Park, the conditions are right. I think it's been said, what was the pod I was listening to? It might have been the review that you and Christian, where you talk about, like, in fact... yourself, Alan, in the agenda where you're talking about it, we're waiting on the team playing well before the support got up, mm-hmm. that you talked about, yeah. The Mönchengladbach game. You know, I think if we go at them and we start well at that, it might light a spark and the atmosphere might be really good. What I'm really doing here is covering every eventuality so that you can't hold me to account on what happens. If I'm being honest, I just don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited. The potential for anything is there. That's what's great.
The potential for
that's
everything.
What's so nerve-wracking about it.
Alan, you know, I think the really famous quote that Ange Postecoglou always says is when it comes to games like this, you know, you stick or twist. You believe in your philosophy and you stick with it, or you completely capitulate and, you know, like we talked about Brendan Rodgers going defensively and stuff like that. Ange is just going to play how Ange wants to play, and that's how we're going to set up on Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the players will want to do that. The players will... You don't have time to do anything different.
Exactly.
You know? So, no, I completely back that. We'll see how it shakes out on Tuesday, but I think I'm just really excited for the occasion, to be honest. Obviously, sticking with the exact same caveat as Sarmani in that please don't get gubbed, which is... You're playing the European champions. They've got quality all through the... They're a very weird profile of team.
They really are, yeah.
The middle of the park, you look at the ages of the midfielders and you think, oh, you know, you get in about them, their legs.
Modric doesn't have the legs anymore.
But their quality is just incredible. Their use of the ball is just exceptional. And they have a winger who can play horrendously for 8.5 minutes. But if for 10 seconds he goes off, then you're fucked, to be honest. So how do you game plan for that? You know, it's very difficult. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be exciting. I think the fans will certainly react to the fact that this is a grade one Champions League game. Yeah. That matters. This isn't a Madrid team in game day six that they'll want to go out and they'll want to make their philosophy for group stages is get it done as quickly as so that we can play a B squad for the last two games, which might work in our favour.
Because we've got them on game day six.
But the fans will then react to the fact that this is grade one football of the highest level and there's an opportunity for us. But I do have this weird feeling that there's something...
In the air.
There's something for us if we do the right things. It might be that it's a tight game and we lose out. So be it, but go and compete. And that would be... I think that would be the message. Go and try and do your thing. Try and be careful not to get caught in silly areas to walk into those traps. Beyond that, go and do your thing. And yeah, hopefully we can compete on the night. That's where the expectation is. But if they do win, what it does is it brings back into play that early 2000s thing of, you know, Leipzig and Shakhtar coming here. You're coming to a stadium where fans will get behind the team and the expectation is that the team wins at home. And that is something that I think if we had... We used to decry the fact that we could only win at home in the Champions League and then actually we just stopped winning in the Champions League. You win three home games and see what happens. So if you can do that, then that's certainly an opportunity for you. So see what happens on Tuesday. How we play on Tuesday, I think, will give us a wee bit of a bearing as to how we think the rest of the group might go, even though it is against, you know, the best team in Europe. Gives you an idea where the level's at, what we need to improve on, and how we can compete against our two teams.
There's part of me wishes this wasn't the first game, especially as it comes so soon after the window closes, and assuming we sign Abigard, that's probably not how you pronounce his name, I'm sure I'll get it right next week. You know, you've got to assume he's not going to be in contention to play there, so, you know, so soon. You know, maybe he will, maybe he won't. Haksabanovic as well.
But would you not, sorry, I know what you're going to say, but would you not rather have those players for Leipzig and Shakhtar than Real Madrid? Because he's more likely to make a difference in those other games, no? Well, you'd rather have him for all three.
I'd rather have our best players up to speed playing this game, because for a number of reasons, it's going to be the most fervent atmosphere. It's a game that's been, 40 years in the waiting. There's so many of our support who've talked about wanting to draw Real Madrid. So many of our support have booked up to go away to Real Madrid in the last game. They are the European champions. That's the only slight thing I'd love to have everybody fully fit and available. And I mean, that might not have happened anyway, just the way football goes. But maybe if it was match day two or three, I think that would have been better, because I do think this is it. There is not going to be a bigger game for us unless we go into the last 16 and draw somebody. There's not going to be a bigger game in the group in terms of the intensity and the profile of it. Notwithstanding that, you know, it's... I can't wait. See, when you just start talking about it, it just gets you,
honestly, the hairs on the back of my head, neck standing up.
I genuinely, it's at times like this where you start to think how players handle it, because
we can't.
I mean, I remember Man City at home, I remember I got to halftime and just think I'm fucked. Like,
aye.
Genuinely shattered. Now, I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not even, you know, but I do think from that mental fatigue point of view, players talk about it's only about the next game. You've got Rangers on Saturday midday, and then you've got Real Madrid on Tuesday night at 7:45. Like, so the Friday night, you've got to be in your bed nice and sharp, nice and tucked up. You're up and you're playing football not long after waking up. Then on Tuesday, you've got 12 hours to, you know,
go over
relax
a scenario,
and
yeah.
pretend. Like, now, there's players that are a wee bit older. You imagine Matt O'Reilly, for example, very level guy. He's playing against Real Madrid Tuesday night, and it'll be the match day one that probably a lot of Europe will tune in to watch. And you've got Glasgow Derby on Saturday at 12 o'clock. Just the highs of kind of being a football player, it must be really exhausting. How do players bring themselves down? Because let's roll back a wee bit, right? 2016, when we beat Rangers, hammered them. And then, obviously, you've got a big European game after that. You go from that high, high, because we know what the atmosphere was like in that day, what that feeling's like. Then you go to the kind of, it's very difficult. And I think that's why, I can't remember which player it was in our team, but they talked about how they just try and stay, not level. To get too excited when things go well, enjoy it, but they don't kind of be up in the clouds, because then that then means when you get like that, you get the exact opposite the other way. But it's fine seeing that interview. It must be fucking a nightmare.
That podcast, The Cynic Chronicles, which Alan and Barry did, covers both those games. It covers the Celtic defeat Rangers 5-1 and then the defeat to Barcelona in Barcelona. It's available on thecynic.co. It's one of my favourite features, The Cynic Chronicles. It's fantastic. We've done lots of them. Check it out.
First half of it's really good.
Half, and then it gets a bit painful. But... obviously, we're going to cover this. Sorry, Chris, you wanted to come in?
No, it's just, I know we're obviously doing it because the Cynic Weekly comes out weekly, but it's weird talking about Madrid, but we've still got to play them. You know, it's almost like you want to give that cliche. One game at a time, folks, you know, even though we've skipped past the game on Saturday. As a support, you've talked about the players, but as a support, the mental energy and emotion that you're going to expend over the next 5 days is
incredible.
Huge.
We'll have, as I say, we'll start building up for the Real Madrid game on Monday. We've got the agenda on Monday. We'll have the review on Tuesday, where Christian and Martin Friel will look at Real Madrid from a tactical and stats point of view and try and kind of figure out how we can beat them. And then on, we'll have it.
Good luck, lads.
Yeah. And then we'll have the reaction to the Real Madrid game straight after the game. And we'll kind of break it down. And this time next week, we'll be talking about the Real Madrid game and looking ahead.
Who we got next weekend?
I believe it is. I can confirm. Let me just confirm to you.
How many other words can you use to try and fill the space?
We have,
look?
It's Livingston.
Livingston. Okay.
I'd have fucking come down that.
At home, thankfully.
At home.
On thecynic.co, when you sign up to the subscription service, you get a lots of content, of course, but we have the Celtic Women's Football Show, which drops every single Wednesday. Claire Wilde and Lorenzo go through everything to do with Celtic Women's football team. Check it out. Last week, they absolutely dominated 1-8-0. This is what happened on the podcast this week.
This weekend, we played Motherwell. It was a fantastic day to be a Celtic fan this Sunday, was it not? So the game against Motherwell kicked off at 4:00. I was feeling really relaxed about this game just because I knew I was going to watch the men's game in the house beforehand. It's at K-Pot, which is like basically around the corner from me. Familiar with the venue, nice kind of small venue to go up to. I was just kind of, the weather was good. I thought this is going to be enjoyable. It got kind of even more enjoyable. We don't talk a lot about the men's game, but it really impacted the day in the way that I think we were probably all going into this game, the fact that the men won 9-0.
I think there's something to be said about how keen Fran in particular always is to link the two teams.
Yeah.
You know, we don't always talk about the men's team because not everything should hang on the men's team, whatever happens to the women's team, but Fran is always very keen to make it very clear that you're a Celtic fan. And that's what he says, you know, if you're a Celtic fan today, what a great day it is. Two teams winning, not the men's and the women's teams. Your two Celtic teams won today. Mm. And he, you know, would hype up the impact of a Celtic win earlier in the day, meaning Celtic are going to go out in the afternoon and play. It's a really, really interesting... It's good how much he leans into that, and I think it's proved so positive for the fans, you know, the renewed interest in the women's team this season, and the players, obviously, because they, he would have probably talked about how Celtic have just won 9-0 today, and then they go out and almost match it. And I would say, from the I was kind of starting work just as the second half was kind of halfway through, and the Celtic Twitter did say it was 9-0 at one point. They randomly went from
We had a whole we had a whole debate because we were actually at the game, and there was a couple sat behind us, and we were kind of obviously because at K Park there's no. There's nothing written down. You're literally counting it on your fingers as the goals kind of rack up and like looking at, like you said, looking sort of doing the same as you were. And at one point we were like, is it? It's not nine. And I was sat with about six people and we were all trying to work it out.
Well, I was in the kitchen at work and I was just like, God, the women have got nine as well today. That's 9-0. And then the game finished and I just clicked Twitter to see the goal scorers again. It just said 8-0. And it had been kind of glossed over. But, you know, when there's that many goals, something's going to get lost in them, particularly when there isn't a scoreboard and there isn't this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe again, another reason why these are basic things to
have. I would love a scoreboard. Just, I just always also think at these games, even at these small venues, like, I don't know how much a clock costs, but it doesn't seem like a clock would be a hard thing to get.
A digital clock that is big enough to see from one stand of a football ground cannot be more than £50. It can't be.
Anyone who knows the price of that, let us know. The other thing, going back to your point about Fran always linking the two teams, I do think it's important. And obviously, like, yeah, we're Celtic fans and we kind of went into the game in the afternoon, you know, spoiler alert, we did win it 8-0, the women's game. But, you know, you noticed in Fran's post-match interview a little bit of, like, very minor shade being thrown. The fact that it's two first teams.
I actually tweeted that before I'd even watched the interview. I saw the thing where he said, you know, your two teams won today. He talks about the two teams.
Yeah.
Celtic have thrown the B team and the women's team together because they play at Airdrie and you can get a combined season ticket. And Fran is rightly very keen to separate the two because one is a first team. It's a professional first team. Yes. The other one plays plumbers and farmers and no development to the first team. But, you know, these little things is why I'm so happy we have Fran Alonso, because not only does he show us things as a tactician, that he understands the game so well and how he can win big games and cup finals and that kind of thing, but he, you know, we talk at Celtic about people who get it. I don't really think there's a better example of that other than, you know, Ange and Cal McGregor than Fran Alonso. He really seems to understand how important it is to be a Celtic player and how special it is.
Yeah, totally. And like no shade to the B team from me. It's just that, like there are the women's first team and the men's first team. It does really annoy me when the B team kind of gets lumped in together as if they're all somehow should be treated equally, because it's just not the way it should be. We could probably do a whole episode on all of that stuff and how Celtic treats academy players and what the development pathway is across men's and women's football, but that's probably too much of a discussion for another day.
I would say the idea of you buy a men's season ticket and it also counts as a women's season ticket, that's a great idea, I think. And we talked about how kind of strange the setup of women's season tickets was last year. It's a bit better this year in terms of the actual numbers of games you're going to get to. Well, they've put it in place at the start of the season. You do save money. But how much of a, you know, how much money is that actually making the club to have women's season tickets? That's why they kind of lump it in with the B team. If everyone who had a men's season ticket could go to the women's games, the attendance is, because again, it's that awareness that the game is on. You can go after a Celtic game. You can go on a Sunday afternoon if Celtic play on Saturday. Stuff like that. You know, we're in the Champions League this season, so we'll have a lot more games on the Saturday. Women's games are always on the Sunday. Yep. These little tiny things just feel like I do feel like they're coming, actually. I don't, you know, we sag off the club a lot, but I do feel like these are things that will make
they are definitely things that are in the mix that are being thought about. I think sometimes it is more difficult to execute some of this stuff as quick as we would like, just in terms of having to deal with a lot of the administration, especially when you're playing at a ground like Airdrie, which kind of has its own whole other, you're having to deal with that club as well in terms of how people are getting in and things like that. So it's not as straightforward sometimes as we might like it to be. And I think you're right, but I also think it's good to kind of keep our finger on, I don't know what the phrase is, like keep pushing.
Get the foot on the neck.
Yeah. I was going to say that, but it sounded a bit too much.
Hello.
Fantastic stuff as always from Claire and Lorenzo. The Celtic Women's Football Show drops every Wednesday. We've got the agenda on Monday, review on Tuesday, Celtic Women's Football Show on Wednesday. Thursday, we've got the Cynic Weekly. Friday, we've got the Lunch Club. And we also have reactions and features, podcasts every day. Sometimes you even get two a day. So check it out, cynic.co. Thank you both for ramping up the excitement for what will be a momentous 5 days for Celtic, for the Cynic, for us as fans, and superb. Christopher Sormani, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me. It's been a bit of a roller coaster.
It has. Alan Edgar, pleasure, as always.
Can't wait. Thank you.
Here we go. It's going to be so great. Can't wait for it. From Christopher Sormani, from Alan Edgar, I'm Chris Gallagher. This has been the Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.